He's got to make sure he's buying a tuner that has that capability. Not all of them do. But if the tuner has enough dynamic range and enough hair on his chest, he can match almost anything, almost any combination with rare exception. With open wire line into the antenna with the right kind of a tuner, you will get an impedance match. And you're absolutely right. The real rule for a ham radio operator that's not written in any of the books, and I'm very disappointed about this, is you resonate first, then it can radiate. None of the books say that. That's the most basic bedrock story of how an antenna works. The signal is going to bounce back and forth in that antenna 20 times before it gets radiated. You want to make sure all of those bounces stay co-phased, in step with each other. That's what the definition of resonance is. And if the antenna is operating with a Q of 20, as most of them are, that means somewhere in the middle of that antenna, the current is 20 times higher than what your transmission line supplied. Somewhere else in the antenna, the voltage is 20 times higher than your transmission line supplied. And it's that extra current that creates the extra magnetic field that creates the beginning of the radiation process. That's what really kicks that signal out into space. So don't worry about the length of the transmission line. And if at worst some crazy little thing happens, which is rare as all heck, on the length of the transmission line giving you grief, to readjust it later is easy as all hell. And sometimes you don't even have to change the transmission line length itself. Let me drop. You may be able to take a small piece of the open wire transmission line and just tee it off to one side at the right location on your open wire line as a stub tuner. So even if you do get some crazy undesired resonance of your antenna, your open wire line, to kill that resonance if you're smart enough is very easy. So make the open wire line whatever length is convenient for you. Set up the antenna the way you want to. As long as your antenna tuner has got enough range, I think you're going to be very happy with it. And as you know, the silent key that used to be heavily associated with this technet, Mel, K2KEY, had a loop antenna in his backyard. You think it was the best thing he ever had since baked bread, if you know what I mean. Let me drop. And later on, you might want to use some of the smarts that Mel came up with. And that is his antenna tuner. He made a variation of the antenna tuner, a slightly more sophisticated version, in which he could adjust the strength of the signal on the left side versus the right side of the open wire line. He could make them operate fully differentially or fully common mode. In other words, when you're using the open wire line differentially, at one instant of time, the right side will be plus 50 volts and the left side will be minus 50 volts. That's differential using. If you start using it more in the common mode, fully common mode, both of them would become plus 50 volts at the same time, and then in the next half cycle, minus 50 volts. As you start slowly sliding from differential mode to common mode of the way you feed the open wire line of a loop antenna, you are steering the beam when you do that. Not exactly in the simple manner like an antenna rotator, but it does steer the beam in which direction is the strongest signal, and you're steering the beam between horizontal and vertical polarization. As he operated that extra tweaking control he had on his antenna tuner, he could adjust his antenna for the desired characteristics of the ionosphere that day, and so the signal he wants to listen to from London that normally was nulled out, he could eliminate that nulling by twisting that control. You don't have to do that at first. Put this into your hip pocket. It's another little goodie that you're able to do with an antenna at a later time. Come back and talk to us as many times as you want to about your loop antenna, Radon. I think you're going to be rather happy with it. KD2, Delta India Golf, K2RIW in the TechNet. You got it done.
Roger, Roger. Thank you very much for the response, Dick, and thanks for the other input for the other stations as well. I will keep you posted. Listening last week honestly re-inspired me. If you can make it resonate, it will radiate. It makes perfect sense, and it's going to be a fun experiment and a great learning experience, I'm sure, as well. And I have this net to thank for it. So thank you once again, and I'll be listening. KD2DIG.
Eric? Hey, John, it sounds like we have another happy customer. We got to send him a bill. That's a joke, Don. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, that's one of the bell made. Was it two all-inductors so you could change the phase of one leg versus the other?
Now I'm not sure, Eric, how he did it. And unfortunately, he's a silent key, and we can no longer ask him. But I think you're right. There are various ways that you can... in fact, one way to do it would literally build the two separate antenna tuners in the same box. One antenna tuner goes to the right side, one goes to the left side of the open wire line. That's one approach. That's the brute force approach. I know he had something a little bit simpler. I think he was doing it with a kind of a butterfly capacitor. And if I go back in my notes, I probably can find out how he did it. But as I've explained this to various people, when I was at the awards dinner in Paramus, New Jersey, 2 years ago, when I was getting that award, I tried explaining it to people who were running a loop antenna, and I could tell they were having trouble seeing it. When you talk about common mode versus differential mode of open wire line, it's a little bit like talking to somebody for the first time about how you measure phase shift, and these are just one of the subjects that the people have quite a bit of trouble with. But I think you and I will eventually figure out how we did it. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Yeah, K2RIW, K2EJ. I'm just sort of like drawing a schematic in my mind. I can see it. Well, you either change the inductive component or the capacitive component. Probably easier to change the capacitive component, but I can see, you know, two roller inductors that are basically on a split shaft where you can adjust one separate from the other. As long as it can create the phase difference, that would do the trick. But anyway, I'm interested in hearing what you have thought about in terms of the infinitesimal dipole.
Yeah, after we hear from Paul, I'm going to tell you what I discovered this week, and to me it's a mind blower. You asked a question last week that got me thinking about something. The next step of antenna understanding, impedance matching to the universe, the 377 ohms. And it's very different than you think. We'll get to that. The next person on the list was Dennis, NY2 Hotel Foxtrot. Our green person out there in Contra, go right ahead, Dennis, K2RIW in the TechNet. Make sure you wait a second or two beyond the four beeps.
Thank you, Dick. Hurricane, or I should say Cyclone Phalen, smashed into India yesterday, and they had frequencies set up for 200 ham operators to, you know, deal with the emergency. And, of course, I couldn't get them from my my home station, even though I tried. And I guess the question is, has anyone ever thought of setting up a repeater system that circumvents the globe? Is it feasible? Or would the time delays between participants gobble the whole exercise? I just wondered. Back to you, Dick.
Dick, don't complain about his audio. It's me.
His audio sounds reasonably good to me, Eric. Stop worrying. A tiny bit loud, but no square wave, not very much distortion. Sounds quite good. We're hearing Dennis very well. If you're about to twist the control, twist it very little and slowly, Eric. Can you make a worldwide repeater system on HF, VHF, UHF? Absolutely. At the speed of light, a signal can go around the Earth something like 27 times in 1 second. I forget the exact number, but the total time delay for a terrestrial like QSO, in other words, a cable system that goes under the Atlantic Ocean, where you get on the telephone system and talk to your buddy in London or Germany or whatever, the time delay is so small by human standards, you don't know it's there. By comparison, back in the days when that cable didn't have the capacity, let me drop. When you talk with a synchronous satellite at 24,000 miles up, which is 6 Earth radii out, so the signal has to go 24,000 miles up to the satellite and back down, and you make an international call through a satellite, and now you're getting something like half a second delay. And what happens with a normal communication on a telephone is you end up with both talking on top of each other and both listening. And until you start developing the situation where you say your piece and then say over, and then the other person talks for a while. while and then says over. Until you start doing that on satellite, you end up with a whole lot of missed conversations because of the way the voice-operated relay works on satellite. So a whole lot of people in the old days used to complain and make sure that they did whatever was required to make sure that their contact with their buddy in Europe was done by a terrestrial link, not by a satellite link. So satellite-wise, the total time delay, the good news of the satellite is it looks at almost half of the Earth all at once. The bad news is it's got an awful lot of delay. So if you're doing a full duplex conversation, it can get kind of nasty. Let me drop. Now, the total amount of resources required for what you're describing is going to be significant, Dennis. I didn't say it's easy. I don't care if you did it on VHF, UHF, HF, whatever, to really cover as much of planet Earth that you'd like to cover. It's going to require an international agreement, multiple nations, putting up quite a bit of equipment. Without a doubt, it's doable. And would you be better off simply dedicating a particular fiber optic link that already is there by way of the internet right now? I can send an email to my buddy in La Salina, Chile, and on a good day, the signal gets there in a very small period of time and can come back with an answer in a very small period of time. So you could have a dedicated fiber optic system that will cover audio, bi-directional audio. And so what's the best way to do it? Should you be using a portion of the internet like something that's like IRLP as opposed to an RF link? The nasty thing about an RF link is that if it was HF, let me drop. If it was an HF system that partially depends on the ionosphere, you cannot depend on that ionosphere. It's the most variable thing in the world, depending on sunspot cycle and gray line and is the sun up there, is the moon up there, and whatever. That ionosphere is continuously changing. It's going to be giving you dropouts and garbles and whatever. So anything you can do to avoid that ionosphere is the right way to go. The good news about the ionosphere is you can get thousands of miles on each hop, if you know what I mean. That's the good news. The bad news is it's not reliable. VHF and UHF, you don't get anywhere near that range on each hop, but it's much more reliable. I'm beginning to think fiber optic is the right way to do it, Dennis. And if you set up something like an Intelsat-like corporation, which for safety reasons, for human safety reasons, is using the already installed fiber optic systems, I think you're going to get the biggest bang for the dollar. But that's just a pure guess on my part. Haven't thought about it very much. Drag your feet in case there's some other people on our frequency here that have got a better suggestion for you, Dennis. NY2HF with some delay. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Well, if you want to hook up to Tokyo or Sydney, Australia, I can do it for your ISO cycle.
Now, there's a man who's got the hardware. Eric, tell us what it would cost. Say, for instance, Dennis wants to have 24-hour communication with a couple of major centers throughout the world, Bombay and Tokyo and Brisbane and whatever. If he wants to have essentially a 24-hour-a-day communication, what do you believe it would cost? How many nations would have to agree? How difficult would it be to do? KE2EJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Oh, right now, right this second, if you wanted to talk to Tokyo or Sydney or New Zealand and do it via amateur radio, wind up on a repeater, actually in Tokyo and Japan, you'll wind up in about 2 dozen repeaters. In Australia, there's about 6 of them that are full-time hooked up together. In New Zealand, there's quite a few. In France, I think there's 2. In England, there's probably half a dozen or more. There's 2 in London that I know of. And basically, all you've got to do is pick up your microphone and dial 4 digits. So that already exists.
Yeah, I being a fairly computer ignorant person, they're going to have a little more information from you. I'm reasonably sure you're discussing Echolink and or IRLP. And so for Dennis to start at ground zero and start doing that, are you telling me that almost all of the infrastructure to do this is already there on these particular major centers that you know about? And how difficult would it be to train other people to be able to use it? Is there a problem as far as violating FCC rules are concerned? Because you're doing it for safety reasons, I think there's no problem, as long as you're not trying to do it for commercial profit. So give us a few more words as to how a neophyte person starts with no knowledge and starts doing this. KE2EJ, K2LAW.
NY2HF, with a further comment, that's Eric.
Yeah, Eric first, and then Dennis Matterwater. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi. Actually, where Dennis is, he should be able to hit a couple of notes easily. Well, one method is IRLP. Go to IRLP.net, www.irlp.net. You will find not only the information on how to use it, but you'll find a list of all the various different stations that are available. And if you look at the connected nodes, you'll find that there are some reflectors, and we call them reflectors because they pass audio to all of these different stations simultaneously. Like right now, Dennis is hearing you via IRLP because the link was having a little difficulty listening to it. So rather than deal with that, I just switched it over to the IRLP. And if you go to echolink.org, you can do the same thing. Actually, you'll be able to hit more places in the world on Echolink because it's not a strictly RF environment. And as far as IRLP goes, the countries that you can connect to don't have third-party agreements. Japan, actually, the Japanese amateurs had to force the government to change their rules a little bit to allow it to exist. So you can't get every country, but you go through the list of quite a few, and usually you can hit one or two repeaters in every major metropolitan area. And there you drop. And if you do it via Echolink, sometimes you can hit, depending upon where it is, and whether or not they have the reciprocity agreement with the United States and various other countries. You can dial up repeaters or speak to individual hams via the Echolink system. So that's in place. That exists. Actually, IRLP has been around for about 12 or 14 years now, and it's a pretty extensive system. There are nodes like the Western Reflector, which will have maybe 3 dozen various different repeaters hooked up to it simultaneously at one time. Or you can, if you have a friend, say, like, I have a friend in Tokyo that I talk to every day, and you just have to be up at the right time of day, and I dial up the repeater that he uses directly, and I use my repeater. With LimeWire, we allow you to dial out on our UHF machine, which has open access. Both the BL and KPQ out in Sheldon have IRLP and both Echolink connected to them, but we don't allow for the free access. Whereas Dennis can use an IRLP node that's on the other fork, which he should have no problem hitting. K2RIW, K2J.
That sounds like a lot of good information there, Eric. Thank you. And when it comes back to you after Dennis, are there some high population centers that do not have good coverage? Bombay probably has it. New Delhi probably has it. But I'll bet your Bangalore might not have it. I'll bet you I could name quite a number of cities, if I was smart enough, in India that might not have that coverage. So let me pass it back to you, Eric, on that one. Are there particular metro centers in England, in India, that might not have the coverage that we desire? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
No, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. I'm not certain that we have an agreement with India in the first place, though. I'd have to look. I'm not sure there are any IOP nodes there, but I know there are Echolink nodes, so as far as what the hams do there, pretty much up to them. But, chances are you've got better coverage with Echolink in certain countries. All British Crown countries are all well considered by IOPs. It was developed by a Canadian, and the main servers are in Canada, so their rules are a little bit different. But look at the list, see what's there.
Sounds like a very good lead. You've got it, Dennis. NY2HF, K2RIW. Wait for the four beeps in 1 or 2 seconds. NY2HF, K2RIW, there, Dennis. Okay, maybe Dennis got disconnected or got called away. And when he comes back, are you there, Dennis?
No, I'm not hearing it come out of 375. Give me a second. Something went wrong.
Okay, we'll stand by and wait till we hear from you, Eric. NY2HF, K2RIW. Hope we didn't lose you through too much of that conversation. Part of what we discovered while you were gone, Dennis, is how to make a whole lot of money in a hurry. Too bad we don't haven't got time to tell you. SY2HF, K2RIW in the second half.
Well, thanks a lot for that, Dick. Actually, I tried to listen in on Echolink. What I was trying to say before is, when India was impacted by the cyclone, which was a 5 or 6 category, their standards, they lost all internet communications. Echolink is, you might as well throw it out the window. You're not going to get anything. We're talking about when nature's fury hits. You don't have the internet most times. You don't even have the towers that used to support it. So what I'm trying to say is, well, you already answered that. You can set up sort of a super highway to the ham where they don't have to rely on propagation and the spears to bounce off of. They can actually work through repeaters, and you've already allayed the idea of a delay. I guess it would just come down to the volume of the amount of people wanting to jump on that highway at any one time. My hesitation is that the internet is really good when it works, but it's prima donna and gets knocked out just about every time you turn around, whether it's a local power authority or something else. So that was my concern. Back to the net. Great net tonight, and I thank you, Dick, and I thank you, Eric, and John, and Paul, for always being there every week. Back to you, net.
Yeah, we make so much money doing this, Dennis, that we can't turn it down, and we just can't get away from it. Please, then I'll tell you another. Now, the hams in general are pretty good at creating standby power, motor generator sets, battery backups, and whatever, on their repeaters. At least stateside, they're moderately good at doing that. The ham communication during Superstorm Sandy, when many people, like a million people in the New York City area, were without power for lots and lots of days. Their houses are being destroyed, the power wasn't there, the telephone wasn't there, the cell phones weren't there, but most of the hams continued communicating. So when it comes to people who have methods of continuing under emergencies, the hams are pretty darn good. Not perfect, but pretty darn good. I'd like to believe, I'd like to believe that many of the hams in India, who have lived many times through their life of monsoons and great big hurricanes and whatever, that they know quite a bit about how to make their particular repeater reasonably reliable under adverse conditions. However, if Echolink and IRLP requires internet connection, and if the internet itself is failing, that sounds like a bit of a problem. Let's see what Eric's got to say about that. I'd like to believe that the internet has a significant amount of redundancy, that when that signal is trying to go from point A to point B, the message, the packet is trying to go from point A to point B, that there's 10 different ways it can get there, so that a significant amount of outage, great big holes in the net, in this mesh could occur, and yet the signal in many cases can still get there. I'd like to believe that's the answer. Let's see what Eric's going to say about this. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Two wireless comments.
Bernie recognized, but Eric first.
K2LIW, KE2EJ. Well, the whole point of TCP, IP, is that it is self-seeking. Okay, it was developed by DARPA for the military, where that if you have one major trap and it drops dead, it will find its route to where it's going via any number of alternate paths. By the way, all of the LIMAR computers are generated backup, and many of the IRLP nodes throughout the country, because the repeaters are actually on mountaintops, they utilize their satellite connectivity for their internet connection. So, and that's true in many different places around the world. By the way, I'm looking at a list of countries that are covered by IRLP. Not that big, but there's quite a few. I don't see India here. But most of the Western countries are available, from Ecuador, England, Germany, Guam, Ireland, Italy, Jamaica, Japan, Mexico, Montserrat, Netherlands, Zealand, etc. The fact that you were the end user in the last mile, let me raise that. You as an end user in the last mile drop, as we call it, you're relying on somebody else's infrastructure to get you the internet, quote unquote. That is a problem. If you're in the middle of the boonies and you want internet service, put a little satellite dishy on your roof, you've got internet service, which has many different centers in which it will downlink to. Fuse, which is DirecTV or DirectWay, or there's quite a few different ones which maintain connectivity, and they're all generator backed up, and they're UPS backed up, and they have multiple outlets. So the main infrastructure of the internet has really never ever gone down. It's only the last mile drop, or, you know, your 20 miles between Cablevision's head end and your feed, which might be because the phone pole got hit and the cable was down on the ground. So the whole concept of TCP is that it is self-seeking and self-healing, and to this date has never fully died. So K2RW is K2J.
Yeah, there's a pregnant set of words in there. Never fully died. When it comes back to you, Eric, I'm going to find out how close did it come to fully dying. But Bernie first. Bernie, you've lived with the internet a lot of your life. And I guess you may have even known it back in the days when it was called ARPANET. So how close can it come to your knowledge to fulfilling what Dennis is requesting? K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW and the TechNet.
I'm going to disagree with what Dennis said, that we can't rely on the internet, but at the same time, you can always draw a disaster bigger and stronger. If we're talking about a thermonuclear-type disaster, no, the internet will not survive that. But I can use the last two hurricanes, the last dozen years here in New York, our repeater systems, yes, they lost internet access during the storm, and both of them got it back within a couple of hours of the storm's completion. We actually had to actively disable our IRLP and our Echolink nodes specifically to keep good and welfare traffic off of our systems because of the need for emergency communication locally. So the internet was not any part of our problem here in the last two storms in New York. As Eric says, the network is self-healing. If the packets can't get directly from, say, my house to Glen Oaks, then they'll go from my house to Chicago. Sorry about that. And so the packets will find a way to get there. They may seem like it's in the wrong direction and out of the way, but the internet is self-healing and will keep coming. You do, as Eric said, you've got to keep that last mile up and working, which means I've got to be able to get power through my cable modem here to be able to be on the net.
Good information, Dennis. Dennis, you're giving us a nice, strong carrier, nice and quiet, clean audio. Everything is great, but your audio, by my standards, was 6 dB low. It could be quite a bit louder. I wonder if your system has a gain control that could be turned up a little bit. K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW.
Actually, Dick, my gain is turned up all the way. It's just a mobile base that I'm using. I'll try and talk a little bit closer to the mic. I guess what I'm saying is, you know, there's always worst-case scenarios. Let's say that Long Island gets hit with an ice storm, and it's an island-wide ice storm that takes down all of the power lines because of the weight and, you know, trees, limbs breaking, everything else. I've had many people who are on the inside of emergency management say that that would be a six-month restoration project. So I guess that's what I'm trying to say about the internet. It's not a thermonuclear device being detonated. It's more nature in design. And just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean it won't. Back to net.
Dennis, I created some confusion. I was telling Bernie, K2 Yankee Oscar, that he needs 6 dB more audio. You do not. You got to back off a little bit. Bernie is low, you were loud, and you got a little louder. So, Dennis, you got to back off a little bit. Bernie, you might have some further comments on all of the above, and we'll see if you were able to boost your audio. K2 Yankee Oscar is going to become a little louder. Bernie, K2RIW. Go ahead, Bernie.
Negative on the audio. That's what I got. I'm on an HD, that's all I have. It's that time of night, so it's the quiet zone, shall we say, so the XYL doesn't come in loose. So that's the best I can do right now.
Very fine, Bernie. So, Eric, do you want to add anything further about all of the above? And if you had the resources, Eric, and you wanted to create a little bit more reliability for monsoons, hurricanes, anything short of a nuclear blast, if you were trying to increase the reliability for emergency communication with what you now know of the current system, what would you change? Would you try to talk the Indian government into being more IRLP compliant? Would you put in more nodes? What would you change if you wanted to make it a little bit better? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2RIW, K2J. Well, we're talking about the amateur radio today that you started with, okay? So that specifically has its own set of parameters. And I could look it up, but I don't think we have third-party agreements with India, so that's probably why they don't have any nodes. We have that situation with a lot of countries. So that's just one reality. And in terms of, here's what I'll give you guys for in terms of a nuclear blast. When we used to have Ma Bell and AT&T, you'll notice that they designed their buildings a specific way, and where their feed horns were and how they built their buildings and where they put their equipment. They were, in essence, bomb shelters and atomic bunkers, still, although they've never proven whether those things would actually survive or not. But given short of an atomic blast, most of the companies like Quest and Williams, most people know Williams as an oil pipeline company, but they are actually one of the biggest carriers of OC-128 and OC-256, and they have the infrastructure that runs through the entire country, and they carry an awful lot of data. Well, let me drop that. And they've had failures, but their entire system has never, ever, ever gone down, including the redundancy that they have. So, as far as, like, most natural disasters, from the major hubs, internet connectivity and data connectivity goes on and on and on and doesn't stop. And so if I was going to change something for the amateur radio service, which is somewhat costly, though, instead of using your local Time Warner or cable or Verizon Fios or Cablevision connectivity, you avoid all that and you do it at your site. You simply put up a satellite dish, you point it at the bird, and by the way, there's redundant birds that are actually in a parking orbit next to the active birds, and you've got interconnectivity through snow, hail, rainstorm. So if you lost your power to your house and you still have a 2-meter radio and you can hit a node that generator backed up or battery backed up, in the case of a node that's hooked up in Las Vegas right now, which run totally on solar power and battery, you can keep communication going while the rest of the world drops dead. K2RW, K2J.
I'm getting the impression that those satellites and the spare satellites that are on location have a lot of worldwide coverage, a lot of connectivity. And then I have to now go to some kind of a port that gives me a gateway, that gives me a ground station to that satellite. Now, there are internet services that I can subscribe to, which I do have the capability of bi-directional KU-band satellite where I can both transmit and receive. I don't think very many people are using that. Rich, K2, N2EO, was on one of those systems at one time. So is is that last mile a problem? Is my access to the gateway a problem? Or should I try to have a KU-band system that goes directly from my house to the bird? And is that the right way to go? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, next time you go to a gas station, when you look on their roof, you'll see what's called a VSAT antenna. It's a small aperture, two-way, bidirectional device. So when you put your credit card in the gas pump, or you buy something with a credit card, or a, just in case of a mobile, with a little RFID key, you're actually talking back to the central office via a VSAT, via a bird. And you'll see there's thousands and thousands of them all throughout the country. And they all work pretty well. That is usually, you know, they'll rent a little bit of space on a bird for their system. But you've got a number of companies that provide bi-directional internet service via another small VSAT dish, which is as reliable as you can stick power into it. So there are many IRLP nodes that are in remote locations that you can't really get to, especially when it snows. And in a lot of cases, there is no internet service there. And the only way that they get internet service is by a small VSAT dish. K2RIW, K2EJ.
2AVU with the comment.
AVU, I think it was. Give me the full call and your name, and then proceed. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick, and good evening to the net. My name is Tim, and the call is Kilo Delta 2 Alpha Victor Uniform. Actually, there are a lot of satellite internet connections available these days. One is called Usenet, and it's actually $40 per month, and but they do have a limit, monthly limit. It's 10 gigabytes. It's their lowest, you know, the most cheapest plan available. But there are a lot of different companies that are doing satellite internet connections. Back to the net.
Very fine, Tim. You got some beautiful looking Yagis there alongside of your car. When I go to your QRZ.com website, so to speak. Eric, how expensive is that VSAT for me to suddenly get access to that service? And do those VSATs exist in India? Is that really going to solve the problem that Dennis is addressing right now? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Well, you'll find that throughout Europe and throughout Asia, VSAT or small aperture terminals is the way many people get internet in the first place. Just remember that we're talking about the amateur radio service, and without the local government blessing for third-party connection, you will not find it connected to a worldwide system. So only that those, what do they call it, CELP, when you go, there's a reciprocal operating where your license is good in their country. But there's also a third-party agreement, which is a separate, whole separate entity. They consider, you know, connection to the internet or telephone line to be part of the third-party agreement. So countries that we don't have those agreements with are not going to be, you know, tethered onto the kinds of services that we're talking about.
Thank you, Wild.
KQ Yankee Oscar. Go ahead, Bernie.
One thing you also have to consider is we're saying, well, gee, the Indian government ought to do this. Right now, the Indian government needs to be able to feed its own people. India, right now, 30% of their population lives in poverty, where in the U.S., about 15% of our population lives in poverty. So the Indian government is not really, you know, they're just trying to hold on and set in good times. So the question may be a bit flawed when we say, what could the government do? The government doesn't have extra money floating around.
I hear you. Anybody with any further comments on this subject before we go back to the original automatic volume control question that John had us on? Anybody with any further questions on the, questions or comments, give me a call. That is right now, K2LIW.
And Julio, November 2, Echo Oscar.
Yeah, you're the guy I wanted to talk to, Rich, and I hope you're in the process of your highest priorities. Make sure you've got good, strong signals on 2 meters. That's your favorite band. That's where all of your local people are located. But you, at one time, did have direct satellite reception and transmission from your house for internet connection, I believe. So give us a few words on that, Rich. N2 Echo Oscar, wait for the 4 beeps, and then 1 second, K2LIW.
Yes, Vic, that was DirecTV, spelled DirecTV. It worked very well. The original DirecTV, you had to go up with the phone line and receive from the satellite. But the later version that I put in, it was all 100% satellite. It worked very well. Dick, what I wanted to comment on, let me let it reset. All right, you know, what we were talking about with emergency communications, it would take some work with the FCC to do this, but what about allowing, in times of emergency, hams to use commercial satellites, either geosynchronous satellites? Me and Barry and N2MB had discussed this many years ago, and this would be something that maybe hams with special licenses could use in times of emergency. Back to net and to Leo.
Let's see what Eric's got to say on that one. Is there any viability on that one, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LIW?
No, I think he's got to be a little more clear about what he's saying about satellites, okay? If you just want to have something for emergency, you can use an Iridium phone, which can talk to it with satellites. But as far as amateur radio broadcasting through a satellite, I don't think that'll ever happen.
Rich, where you and Barry discussed this, did you have a way of making it legal, if you know what I mean? Over to you, Rich.
No, what we were discussing was, you know, sort of like a Mars license, that sort of thing, where you could then be allowed to use IRLP, Echolink, over a commercial satellite, and maybe not every satellite of every frequency, but certain satellites of certain frequencies for purpose of emergency communication. Back to you, Dick.
Is it 2QAQ with a comment?
Go ahead, Glenn. Wait for the beeps.
Yeah, I believe the last time I went through Part 97, when we were taking our ham licenses way back when, that it actually said, in time of an emergency, now I'd imagine emergency really means life-threatening situation, that any frequency is available to, if you have a life-threatening situation or something's going on, and you have the ability to transmit on any frequency to get emergency help, that is, from what I understand, perfectly acceptable and not illegal. But certainly not to handle traffic and other things like that if you're not in a real emergency. There may be an emergency going on, but if you have any kind of life-threatening situation at any frequency that you have available to you is allowable for use. Casey 2, QIQ.
I remember that clause. And like you said, we're now in a gray zone as to what is a sufficiently life-threatening like situation. It's not easy to define when you cross the threshold in which we're allowed to jump onto the commercial frequencies and use them in theory to save life and limb. but I can see a lot of nasty situations where somebody said, hey, it was an emergency to me. I got this severe hangnail. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I mean. And if there's any further comments, K2LAW.
NY2HS.
Okay, I heard Dennis and one other person. We'll pick up Dennis first. And your audio is about right now, Dennis. NY2HF, K2LAW.
I just wanted to thank everybody for their input. Somewhere along the line, though, it kind of morphed into something other than what I was saying. What I was saying is using ham radio and repeaters to avoid going on the Internet in times of emergency. Not to, VSAT up to a satellite or any other thing. Echolink, I think, is just a really abysmal thing right now. It's just the delay is too great that you can't break into communications when they're going on. I've tried many times on this net, and it just doesn't work. I guess the other thing is, you know, you brought up an interesting concept that Article 97 says that in the time of emergency, you can use any means at your disposal to communicate that emergency. What if you have a Mars radio and you're able to break in on a police frequency or a fire department frequency? Interesting question, though. Back to that.
Unless it is an extremely severe situation, I'm of the belief that if you and I took something like a Baofeng radio, which can tune everywhere, and you and I put it, Dennis, on a FAA frequency, a police frequency, or a fire frequency, or a EMT or a ambulance service frequency, you put it on one of those services, and I think there's a high probability you're going to get into a lot of trouble. The feds are going to come get you. And for you to prove that it was valid what you did, I've heard a lot of evidence of where somebody for a very short period of time interferes with one of those emergency services. And boy, they come and get you in a hurry. I think you, unless your back is against the wall and nothing else is working, I don't think you want to go there, Red Dennis. That's my impression. NY2HF, K2LAW.
I agree with you, Dick. You know, it was just something I threw out because there's a lot of people with Mars modified radios, and matter of fact, I'm getting rid of one. So it just crossed my mind. But you're right. If you tried to use one of those, there's no doubt that someone would come down heavy on you, and it probably wouldn't be worth it. So you'd have to deal with whatever was going on a different way. Back to net, and great net tonight, Dick.
Hey, too wild.
This is QQ, I give with a follow-up comment.
Okay, QQ.
YO, Glenn, and Eric in that order. K2YO first, go ahead.
I know of one example, and I don't remember what the city it was in. There was a situation where a police officer was shot. A civilian took the police officer's radio and used it to communicate for help. Clearly a violation of many FCC rules. The civilian was actually given a medal for saving the police officer's life. So the kinds of things when they're talking about in emergency, they're talking about imminent death. And when you start stepping into other people's frequencies, then you're taking away their capability to perform their job. So, yes, you can use your Mars radio to contact the police department, but somebody better be dying because you're taking away from their capability of protecting life and limb. So, yes, it can be done, but you really have to think about what is considered an emergency, and there better be somebody bleeding and dying.
That sounds very reasonable. Bernie, I sometimes listen to the local fire department, and my goodness, do they have compact speech. Wow. They've got a number for everything, and they've got three-letter and four-letter abbreviations for everything. And there are times when I have heard three simultaneous emergency ambulance calls required. There's three firehouses in my district in Dix Hills, and I've heard all three of them handling an emergency service, an emergency ambulance service simultaneously, coronaries and falls. And the most amusing one to me is emergency required violence in progress, and the police department and the fire department are connoitering, are assembling one block away before going into the area of violence. I was amazed that my community could have that. I've heard that twice in the last couple of months. Violence in progress. And that gets my attention. Glenn, KC2QIQ, K2RIW, go ahead, Glenn.
WGB would comment also. Yeah, my comment, Dick, was that I think if you put it in this perspective, that if you're on, you know, if you have a situation where you're, you know, you have an emergency in your house, somebody's having a heart attack, you need to get a hold of some emergency service, and you can't get through on the telephone, there's just no one, you know, you can't yell out the door, there's nobody that you can get in contact with, and you need somebody, but you have a radio, and you know it's on that frequency, and you start yelling your name, your address, and you get them, the emergency services to your house, and you finally do get the emergency taken care of, for heaven's sakes, even if you do have to deal with something legal afterwards, at least you're alive to deal with the legal service afterwards. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
Exactly.
Yep, I understand. Eric and then John in that order. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. It's the cabin guys basically covered. I was going to bring up a couple of cases where, one case where they got a police radio frequencies because there were no amateur repeater frequencies available at that point. Another one in the boating where they tried to raise the Coast Guard. They couldn't raise the Coast Guard. But they had a radio that could tune to, actually, it was an FBI service frequency, and they did it that way. There's been a number of cases where, if you're in a severe accident, or if it's a life or death situation, that's usually not an issue. The example that Bernie gave, where someone was given a medal, is probably another really cool example of it. But there's been instances of being an unauthorized operator on an unauthorized frequency where it comes to life and safety, it's a forgiving thing.
Understand. John, during Superstorm Sandy, I know that a significant number of people on the shore of Staten Island, where you live, were flooded. The houses were swept away. Some of them were drowning. Power outages, fire, all kinds of nasty things are going on. And so maybe you listened to some of the emergency communications, kind of curious what you heard during that period of time. And maybe that's not what you were what I'm talking about. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2WGB. Well, Dick, what I was going to mention is you have to look at it like a fire alarm box. You don't need a license. You don't need a license for the radio. Could be a child, could be anybody. Pick up whatever communications available and put out the message. It doesn't matter what frequency you're on. Just like Glenn said, that's how I look at it. And a lot of things have been done. And during Sandy, the police radio, if you found one, you probably couldn't use it because the channels were busy. So it was a zoo. So anything, any port in a storm. Back to you, Dick.
That's sort of what I was saying with my local fire department. There are times when, boy, they get super busy. And Murphy's Law dictates that when you've got an emergency, they're going to be super busy simultaneously. And for you to get an edge in word-wise, it's not going to be easy. Okay, let's go back to John's original question from the mailbag, and that was, what's going on with the AGC circuit of modern-day radios? In the old days, you really could turn down the area of gain control. And whether you knew it or not, you were desensitizing the radio. In other words, until the signal became significantly stronger when you turned that area of gain control down, until the signal became 10, 20, 30 dB stronger than normal. The radio had no response. However, the S-meter sat down on the left-hand pin. The modern-day radios have got a whole lot of dynamic range to the automatic gain control. That voltage, that negative